Luke 4, and we'll be starting in verse 23. And this is the point in Luke, just a little background for you. Jesus is in Nazareth. He's in the synagogue, as his custom was. And he had just finished reading out of Isaiah about himself. It was about himself. What he read was, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor." And this was a prophecy from one of God's chosen prophets, and therefore was a declaration by God himself. Yet that prophecy had stood unfulfilled until Jesus, from Isaiah to Jesus. And no one had ever claimed that it was about himself from the time of Isaiah up to the time of Jesus, and even if they had, they were false and they were a liar. So here's what it says in verse 23. Jesus said to them, "You will surely say this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself. Whatever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also in your country. Do also here in your country.'" Then he said, "Assuredly I say to you, no prophet is accepted in his own country. But I tell you truly, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there was a great famine throughout all the land. But to none of them was Elijah sent, except to Zarephath in the region of Sidon, to a woman who was a widow. And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian." Now Jesus has just declared that he has been anointed by God. That's what he read between verses 18 and 19. And he had been anointed by God, who, by the way, is also his Father, to preach the gospel to the poor. And the Jews were so unprepared for this eventuality that they immediately questioned Jesus' sanity. They didn't know what to think. And therefore, Jesus says there in verse 23 that we just read, "You will surely say this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself.'" In this proverb, Jesus is the physician, but he's sick in the proverb. And no one wants to be helped by a sick doctor. That doctor needs to care for his own self, for his own ailments, his infirmities, before he should help others who are sick. And no one wants to be seen by a sick doctor who's wheezing and coughing and has open wounds. That's just weird. But the way Jesus is using this proverb does not imply a poor physical state, like having a cold or whatever, but a mental one. It's your sanity. It's another way of claiming that someone has lied, that they're a liar, or they're just out of their mind. So they need to show proof before anyone will believe what they just said. So you're the anointed, huh? You're the one Isaiah was speaking about all those years ago. And they said, "You're Joseph's son. You're Mary's little boy. Physician, heal yourself. You're a liar and you're crazy." And Jesus knows what they're thinking. And that's why he says, "I know that you think," and I'm paraphrasing, "I know what you think, I'm not telling the truth, and that you think I'm claiming to be someone I'm not. But let me tell you this too." This is in verse 24. "Assuredly, I say to you, no prophet is accepted in his own country." Now, what does Jesus mean by that? No prophet is accepted in his own country. I suspect that everyone was a little bit surprised by that, because they would say, "How can you say that, Jesus? We're the Jews. We're the Jews. We pretty much made up the word prophet. God speaks only to us. I mean, look at the scrolls. Count the number of prophets we've had. God gave us these prophets, and we teach their words in the synagogue. We have Habakkuk, we have Daniel, we have Jeremiah, we have Isaiah, we have David. There's just dozens. We have so many prophets. Show us one prophet that we haven't accepted. But the children of Israel were a stubborn and rebellious people. And that's not me saying that. That's God saying it. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 6. They somehow miss this in their history class, that they want to rebel against their God. And it's not just once or twice. Not even just three times or four times. It's many times. In Jeremiah 6, verse 27 and 28, it says, I have set you as an assayer and a fortress among my people, that you may know and test their way. And this is God talking. He's speaking to the Israelites, not anybody else. These aren't the Syrians. These aren't any Gentiles. Because back up there in verse 8, he says, be instructed, O Jerusalem. This is to them. This is to the ones he called his people in the past. He says, I have set you as an assayer and a fortress among my people, that you may know and test the Israelites. They are all stubborn rebels walking as slanderers. That's God saying that. Now, God didn't need to say this because it was evident anyway. Before Jeremiah was even born, Israel had lost its way and rebelled against God and rebelled against his prophets over and over and over. And if you were an angel with the advantage of watching the Jews over the centuries, you'd think it was in their nature to rebel. How often they did that. You'd think it was in their nature to reject God. So Jesus says, assuredly, I say to you, no prophet is accepted in his own country. Those Jews were utterly caught off guard by that statement. Yet it wasn't anything new to the Jews of that day or to that generation or even to that century. Back in 1 Samuel 8, Samuel was displeased, if you remember that. He was displeased because the people had rejected him and had demanded a king instead to rule over them. Samuel had been doing a fine job. But they rejected him. They wanted a king. They wanted to be like everyone else that was around him. Now, that country's got a king. We should have a king. They begged him, now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. And this broke Samuel's heart so much that he prayed to the Lord. And it says, and the Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you. And this is the reason. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. That I should not reign over them. And this is the truth that Jesus was talking about. Whenever the children of Israel rejected a prophet or a judge, they were rejecting God. Not that prophet, not that judge. They would not have him reign over them. Think of it this way. Why is there so few churches preaching the true gospel, but so many churches, they're preaching a perverted version of it? It does not offend them, and there's hardly any sin talked about, and it doesn't accuse men or women of anything. That's the popular one. Why is the worship service of the God of the Bible attended by so few? But the worship service of a false god attended by so many. They have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, says God. In other words, they will reject God at any opportunity. That's just our nature. That's the nature of our hearts. And they'll reject Him in every place and from every person. And this includes from God's chosen prophets and preachers. It doesn't matter. They will accept a man that they think is good, and they have, to their ruin. But they will reject a man through which God says good things. They don't like that. Now, Jesus so perfectly explains why a prophet is not accepted in his own country. Look here in the next couple of verses, verses 25 and 26. He says, "But I tell you truly, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, and there was a great famine throughout all the land. But to none of them was Elijah sent except to Zarephath in the region of Sidon to a woman who was a widow." Now, this was not just any famine. It was a drought so severe that Elijah could not provide for himself in the wilderness. He couldn't even provide for himself. He couldn't get enough food. God had to send ravens to him to feed him. And eventually the brook that Elijah was camping near, that dried up. So even the famine affected one of God's chosen. So he sent them. He sent him to a widow in Zarephath. But why a widow? Why a widow? If you're thinking, "I'm starving, I've got no food, I've got no water, I've got no money, nobody likes me," why a widow? Why not some king or a master of a house or some rich merchant? Because this widow's physical condition is our condition in a spiritual sense. In a spiritual sense. When Elijah finds her, listen to this, she'd already given up hope. She had gone through some of this famine just like Elijah had. It didn't have any ravens to feed her. She wasn't camping near a brook. She'd already given up hope. Her plan when she met Elijah was to make one last meal, eat it with her son, and die. So what brings a person that low? It's the realization there's no hope. There's no hope. Everything your eyes see and your ears hear and your mind knows is telling you that you're gonna die. You can't buy your way out. You can't spend enough money to get out of a famine because there's nothing anywhere. You can't work your way out. What are you gonna work for? More money to not buy food? You can't plan your way out. What are you going to plan for? I plan to eat. What good does that do you? You can't buy, you can't work, you can't plan. Your death is coming, and there's no stopping it. That's the state of this widow, and that's the state of our souls without Christ. We are without hope. We have no water. We have no food. We can plan all we want, but our plans usually don't work out any good. Jesus says in our text that God knew, He knew of all of the widows in the land of Israel in Elijah's day. Yet, He didn't send Elijah to all of them. He sent Elijah to one widow, one hopeless widow, that she might be saved from the great famine. Why didn't the widow reject Elijah? You know, think. Get in the mind of that widow. She just wanted to die. There was no hope. She didn't want anything. But why didn't she reject Elijah like Israel had rejected the prophets that God had sent her, being Israel? Because God had chosen that widow. And He had sent Elijah to save her. That's what God does. When he calls you out, he's called someone else to go get you first, to preach. He had not chosen the other poor dying widows throughout Israel, just this one. And she did not reject Elijah or God because she had been saved from the famine. It was through Elijah, but God had done it. And likewise, Jesus says in our text, it's there in the next verse 27, and many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian. That made the Jews mad. It says, so all those in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath. Why would they be mad that Naaman was healed? That doesn't sound very kind of them. And it was not because they weren't mad, because God had healed a male leper instead of a female one. It was not because the leper's name was Naaman. It wasn't anything like that. It was because Naaman was a Syrian, a Gentile, and not a Jew. The children of Israel thought they were alone, that they alone were the favored of God. The favored sons and daughters of the Most High God. And God's light shone only on them, and God's blessings fell only on them, and God's words came only to them. Forget the other nations. Second class. Except the truth was, his blessings didn't always fall on the Israelites, and his word was spread to the Gentiles. It's understandable to us why these Israelites would get mad trying to think how they thought. We've all thought we were someone's favorite, like a teacher's pet or a teacher's favorite or mommy and daddy's favorite or a friend's favorite. We've all learned by experiences that teachers and friends, they change their minds. And they choose another favorite, perhaps, and we've all come to realize that mommies and daddies do not have favorite children. Likewise, God is the father of all his children. He doesn't have a favorite. He chooses all his children out of all types of people. Doesn't matter skin color, doesn't matter how tall they are, doesn't matter how stout they are. Doesn't matter if they're born with one leg. The body doesn't matter. And this means that there are some people whom he chooses to be with him, and there are some whom he meets on the last day and tells them, I'm sorry, I never knew you. I never knew you. God said back in Exodus, he says, I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. He didn't say, I'll check with you first to see if it's okay to have mercy and compassion on this one person or this group of people. He said, it's up to me. That is why he chose that one widow. That's why he chose Naaman only. And this is why Jesus says no prophet is accepted in his own country. Those prophets that they rejected are from God, and God always reminds people that they're hopeless without him, and they're blind without him, and they're unrighteous. Unrighteous without them, him. No son or daughter of Adam wants to hear that message. Because they thought they were good. They thought they were doing okay. But they don't want to hear it, and they'll reject it and find someone else who declares an easier message. One that they find not too offensive. And whatever that message is, if it lacks God's sovereignty, if it lacks his righteousness, the truth of it, if it lacks his mercy toward the hopeless, undeserving sinners that we are, well, then it lacks the main ingredient, hope. It lacks hope. But these Jews listening to Jesus here in Luke, They do not want to believe that message. They don't like it. They want him gone, and they form a mob to try to throw him over a cliff. It says there in verse 28, "So all those in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath and rose up and thrust him out of the city. And they led him to the brow of the hill on which their city was built, that they might throw him down over the cliff." They are just going to murder him because he healed a Gentile. Well, God did. Because he said that a prophet was sent to a widow, or just one. That they're not as favored as they think they are. People get violent when they're cornered. And they knew they were cornered. They'll do anything to feel safe again. And to them, Jesus, Jesus was dangerous. It's so funny to think that. Compare that now with the image of Jesus today, just that little baby. He's dangerous. Can't talk about election, that's dangerous. Can't talk about total depravity, that's dangerous. But Jesus' message made them to be equal with the Gentiles, to the heathen, the unfavored. Yet God won't let a little thing like a mob stop him. Because it says there in verse 30, Jesus walks right on through. I don't know how that happened. And it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. He got out. He walked through a mob that wanted to kill him. You can call it a miracle. It doesn't matter. The truth is, he escapes the mob because he has an appointment. He has an appointment. He's been sent, just like Elijah was sent. And his appointment's with a man who has an unclean spirit in Capernaum. He's got somewhere to go. He's got unfinished work. So he escapes. And if his work's unfinished, he will not stop until that work is done. I love to hear that every time someone says it. I'm pretty sure it's a hymn. I can't bring it to mind right now. But he doesn't stop until the work is done. Well, I hope God blesses the message. Drew, will you pray for us, please?
Father, we pray that you